It surprised a lot of people because a lot of people didn't like those people, those retail clerks. They don't know anything about unions and, you know, that. I mean, that is a talk of some people.
You get it from examples that are set. You know, you go to the conventions and you hear the grievances and what's happening in the industry. So you said, gee, they're on the right track and we have to do better for our members.
And we did it for self-preservation too, because it was fine, local 111, but packing houses were closed down. All kinds of places. The whole industry changed. I went to the office Monday morning, said, who's still with us? Is it another closure? Honestly, it was awful.
For the member working on the floor, it was definitely a huge benefit to them. And the tough fights that had to be taken would have been way more difficult. And we may have lost rather than, I mean, some you feel like you lost if you've taken wage cuts, but you win if you've still got the jobs there.
And it came up that USCW was going to be the name. And if you ask a red meat guy what it stands for, is you f***ing clerks won, because they got to pick their name.
You are listening to Celebrating Our Past, Preparing Our Future, a podcast series created through a collaboration between UFCW Local 832 and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg, documenting a variety of events and issues within the union's history and what they mean for Local 832 today. This episode is entitled The Merging of Two Union Cultures, The Merging of Locals 832 and 111. The history of Local 832 is a history of mergers. Today, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 832 represents workers from retail, food processing, healthcare, security, industrial, garment, and transportation industries, making it a very diverse union. This diversity is a hallmark of the union today, but the roots of the diversity go back further. It was in 1979 that the retail clerks and the Amalgamated Meat Cutters merged as one union internationally, creating the United Food and Commercial Workers. It then took another decade before Local 832 and Local 111 merged as one union in Manitoba. This merger between the meat cutters and the retail workers, although not the only merger in Local 832's history, changed the makeup of the union permanently and had a lasting effect on Local 832. The merger not only merged two unions, but two union cultures. What follows are some of the stories and memories on the merger between the meat cutters and the retail clerks union. Jerry Otto was a long-serving union rep and secretary treasurer for UFCW Local 832. Jerry explains how before the merger, there was competing jurisdictions between unions that benefited employers more than unions or union members, and how that factored into the merger.
For instance, Dominion Stores, we had three unions, and we had the baker workers, we had the meat cutters, and ourselves in there. And then jurisdiction became a problem, because even though we had the chain store negotiations with the four companies sitting there at the bargaining table, we'd negotiate alone, and then the meat cutters would negotiate alone, and so the company would start juggling, giving this union something here, giving this union something, and then you had all this going on, seesawing back and forth between the unions going on. So the merger was definitely the thing to do.
Hugh McNeil came out of Canada Packers meatpacking plant and became a longtime union rep for meatpacking workers. Hugh McNeil was a key player in the merger between the retail clerks and the meatpackers. Hugh explains some of the tensions around the merger.
Then, of course, the big thing came along later years, merging with the retail clerks. I mean, that's another big step. It surprised a lot of people because a lot of people didn't like those people, those retail clerks. They don't know anything about unions and, you know, that. I mean, that is a talk of some people, but that's just some of them. You know, it took a long time to work out that merger. We finally, of course, got all our people merged here in Canadian Food and Allied Workers, but there was a retail section and there was an industrial section. So getting them both together. So I was the one that was appointed to do that too. And of course, Christoph was the one that was heading up the retail clerks. We had to, first of all, we had to agree at the top level, you know, the executive level, that we would do it. And I mean, I was the one that was working with him how to do this. So we had different meetings at the executive level. So when we got the executive convinced that it was the proper thing to do, to become one organization, then we had to go back to the plants and have membership meetings again. And we went to every unit, you know, to have a membership vote on the merger. They had the votes in their units and we had the votes in our units to merge. And finally, it all went through. You know, you look back now, you wonder why they were against it. But, you know, they just thought that they were okay the way they were. They didn't need to merge. Why should we merge with those people? We're okay ourselves. At the higher level, we thought it was the thing to do.
Bernard Christoph was a long-time president of UFCW Local 832. Bernard Christoph briefly explains how the merger came about.
Yeah, well, I always made pitch to Bruno Zimmer to merge with us. And then one day, one of his rep, Colin Trigwell, talked to Bruno and said to Bruno, we got to merge with Local 832. It's in our best interest.
Bruno Zimmer was the president of Local 111, which represented meatpacking workers in Manitoba. Bruno explains both the process of merging and the reasons why the meatpacking unions decided to merge.
We foresaw that we were eventually going to be merging with Local 832 because the international unions merged. One became the Amalgamated Meat Cut Butcher Workmen of North America and the Retail Clerks went to one union, became United Food and Commercial Workers. So we were now all one union on top, but not on the bottom. So our national office in Toronto, they said to me, yeah, they know that Bernard Christoph, 832, were after me. And Bernard said, you know, we should merge. I said, yeah, good point, but we're not ready. And then my national office said to me, before you start merger talk with Bernard Christoph, 832, he said, then you should merge your locals first. You should be one unit, which we did. It was a long process, a lot of headaches. I'm surprised they didn't have ulcers when it was all over.
Bernie Adamanchuk was a longtime rep for Local 832, coming from the retail side of the union. Bernie explains the difference in union cultures between the meatpackers and the retail clerks. Bruno Zimmer explains how the meatpacking workers were organized in comparison to the retail clerks.
The meat cutters considered themselves as a trade and that they were better because of the packing houses and everything else. And they, quite frankly, they were correct. Their trade union knowledge was better than the white-collar people that we had in the stores, no two ways about it, and they had a better education system than we did. And they trained their stewards. They had a steward system well before we did, and we learned from them, and I think we became better than they did. So when you look at Local 832 in particular, of all the UFCW locals across Canada, I'd say we're probably number one as far as an educational center is concerned. The meat cutters were better educated because of the plant type of unit, and you had the same people there all the time. They were stronger as trade unionists, no question about it. But somehow we got our act together because the companies were kind of trying to divide us at the time, and really it didn't make sense. This has got to come to an end, and it did. And it was friendly, and the exchange of members or bargaining groups, it worked out well.
Like our stewards were trained to file grievances. Their stewards weren't. They had to call every time they wanted a grievance, they would phone a rep here and he would go down, file the grievance. Our stewards were all trained to file their own grievances. In first step, they would go right management themselves. And if couldn't resolve, then they would phone the rep. You know? So there's some practices we had, and they said, you mean he didn't call the rep? I said, no, don't have to. We trained our people. We went and had them at schools and everything else and trained them to file how to file a grievance, you know. So we didn't have to run to every place and You know, they might phone and say, "What do I?" They might maybe phone the office and say, "How do I put this down?" Or maybe, "What's the word for this?" And we would tell them, but they would file their own grievance. That's just one example, you know, and got it resolved many times.
Mary Johnson was a union rep and a union negotiator. She came out of the Burns meatpacking plant. Mary explains the effect the merger had on the union members at the Burns plant.
The merger, I believe, was such an excellent thing to happen to us at Burns. Definitely was. For several reasons. One is we're a smaller local, so we had access to those resources. I don't believe our dues went up for a period of time, but we definitely got more value for our dues, I believe, totally. And the reason for that is we got our union magazine, so you got every member got to see that. So it wasn't just without a union magazine, it's controlled by those few people at the top. The access to the more training, better training, all that sort of stuff was really excellent as well. And you could actually see it in being able to bring in and have more at your disposal for the fight that we took on. For the fights after that the packing house industry has taken on, definitely the larger local was better for it. The biggest transition was probably for the people that were in those power positions that no longer were there, because you have a lot of power when you're on a board of a small entity, right? So I think that would have been the hardest transition piece, where people would have felt it the most. But for the member working on the floor, that it was definitely a huge benefit to them. And the tough fights that had to be taken would have been way more difficult. And we may have lost rather than, I mean, some you feel like you lost if you've taken wage cuts, but you win if you've still got the jobs there. And for the smaller bargaining unit, they may not have been there.
Dennis Allard was a longtime union rep for the retail side of the union. Dennis explains the positives of the merger for the retail side of the union and how that pushed them to be better trade unionists.
Once I was involved with the UFCW, then we started attending seminars, conferences, the Manitoba Federation of Labor. So you met other unions and you found out how militant they were and what they were doing. And we were saying, gee, we have to do a catch-up here. You know, that was obvious. Some of the unions were very active politically. Some were very active socially, you know, helping the members one way or the other. I guess you get it from examples that are set. You know, you go to the conventions and you hear the grievances and what's happening in the industry. So you said, gee, they're on the right track and we have to do better for our members.
Ultimately, all of the locals were merged under UFCW Local 832 by 1990. As was pointed out earlier by Bruno Zimmer, the meatpackers' decision to go with the merger was pushed largely by self-preservation. This becomes clear when one sees the reorganization or rationalization of the meatpacking industry. By 1990, many of the meatpacking plants were closing down, and the ones that were still operating were either in the process of being shut down, or companies were asking for major concessions from the unions. Current UFCW president Jeff Traeger explains how this affected plant workers in the Maple Leaf plant at La Jemaudière and Marion.
In 1999, I will never forget this date, September 13th, 1999, Burns had purchased Maple Leaf on La Jemaudière, so it's Marion and La Jemaudière, a large plant. Used to have close to 2,000 members and was a kill-cut operation for hogs. Maple Leaf purchased it and entered into major concessionary bargaining with Local 832 to the point of wage reductions in the 40% range. All kinds of major concessions. And they got it. They got those concessions because they were willing to table $13 million in rate buy-downs. So as you quite often see with major concessionary bargaining, a large company comes in and says, the industry costs this much, X, and we want it to cost X minus 25 or 30%, so we're going to table that, but in order to make it palatable to your members, here's $12 million, we'll divvy it up, $1,000 per year of service, this guy's going to get $35,000, this guy's going to get $22,000, this guy's going to get $18,000, depending on how many years you get. Everybody gets a minimum of $5,000, even if you've got less than 5 years. That's $11 or $12 million. We'll sign the check. That's the proposal. And, of course, it always comes with a threat. We don't get that. There'll be a for sale sign in the building, and all of you are out of work, right? So it's that kind of bargaining. So I wasn't at the bargaining table, but I was a scrutineer in the election, and it was absolutely horrible, because even though the members voted 76% in favor of it, it became really clear that they were voting for a check. They all saw that list with their, found their name on it, saw how much money they were going to get, and knew that they had to vote yes to get that. So they voted yes to get that. Then when we walked out of the building, I walked out with Bernard Kristoff and Cyrus Lister. One of the issues was is that all of our members' cars had tickets on them, because it was a whole whack of them had been ticketed during the meeting. But more importantly than that, there was a pile about 3 feet high right outside the front doors of this building with our documents that we'd handed out at the meeting, with the union collective agreements, and with your UFCW membership cards that had been lit on fire by our members. They had poured gasoline on a pile of these and actually lit them on fire. So police and fire people were shortly on their way. And Bernard asked myself and Cyrus to escort him to his vehicle. I'm not a very big guy, and a lot of these people were very big guys, but we did so, and then he drove away and left us to talk to the crowd. The only good news is at that point, police and fire department were arriving, so potential escalation never occurred. The reason I'm telling that story now is because when I got pulled out of healthcare, they put me in to bargain to represent that unit. So I had to walk into that Burns plant. The reality had set in for a lot of these workers. They had taken the check, many of them had invested it, spent it, done something with it, and now we're faced with the reality that my $18 an hour job was becoming a $13 an hour job. Instead of bringing home $36,000 to $40,000 a year, I was going to be bringing home $26,000 to $30,000 a year. And how was I going to make this work? And who did they blame? They blamed the union for agreeing to it. They just said, damn union. You know, and they didn't even say damn themselves for 76% of them voting in favor of this. Going into that plant for me was a baptism by fire. Walking in there was terrible. I'd put my whites on, walk through the pork cutting room, and I'd be just about completely red by the time I got to the other side, because I was a union guy. So if the guys had a piece of fat or piece of gristle on the end of their knife, it would be splat, flinked right at me, and they were very good at aiming those things, by the way. And I'd sit alone in the lunchroom, and there'd be 175 people in the lunchroom and zero at my table. No one, not even the stewards, would sit with me at that point, because people were really in a negative environment. And I made a decision that probably one of the best I ever made as a union rep was that, okay, damn it, I'm going to service this place every day. I'm going to come here every day. And I did. I went through the barns. I did the tour of the shop floor. I was in the lunchrooms every day and every night for the two shifts that they had. And over about a three-week period, people started to talk to me. People started to sit with me. People stopped flicking fat at me when I walked through. People started bringing me their issues and concerns. The shop steward started asking me how the rollout was going to work once the changes were made in the collective agreement.
While meatpacking plants were closing down in Winnipeg, in 1999, Maple Leaf opened a plant in Brandon. Much like what had happened across the country, the plant in Brandon was marked by its low wages and benefits in comparison to what packing industry workers had in previous decades. Former UFCW Local 832 President Bernard Kristoff explains how the negotiations for the Maple Leaf plant came about. And Mary Johnson explains what it was like to start to work as a union rep in the Brandon plant, and the steps both the company and the union took to create a better working environment.
The history of the Brandon Maple Leaf plant was, it was interesting, it happened one day when I was negotiating at the Holiday Inn Hotel, and lo and behold, the Minister of Industry and Commerce for the Conservative government said that Maple Leaf wanted to come to Manitoba. He said, you know, they want maybe to talk to you. I said, that's fine. Let's talk. And I met a fellow by the name of working directly for, I think, the McCain brothers. He had the absolute confidence. Israel Chaffetz was his name. And he knew what made union tick, and he knew what I wanted. And we organized the plant in Brandon. There was a few people then, and we had a small meeting, got certified. And then we negotiated an agreement with him, and covering all the bases. They wanted the break at first and the wages. They didn't want to pay high wages because they had cost of building the plant and many other. And I agree with that. It was a long-term contract. And then over the years, we raised the wages and benefits substantially. And I took a chance in the sense of negotiating with him. We negotiated by the airport at the hotel. We negotiated in Vancouver. And these were the chances I took. There was just me and my secretary treasurer. That's it. That's how it was done. But there was things I wanted in there, seniority and another item and other issues, pension plan, dental plan. And he wanted certain things in terms of cost. And I agree with that and came back to Brandon. I had the people ratify the agreement, explain it to them. And boy, did it work, you know. We had a presence. And again, they knew that sooner or later we would organize them because organizing was a key to the local. To stand still in our in the local in terms of size of membership, you have to organize constantly. And that was part of our objective.
I got a phone call on a Saturday saying, Mary, what do you think of Brandon? And I said, sure, why not? And I started in Brandon that night at the Shop Stewards Conference. I transferred out to Brandon to the Maple Leaf plant there. And that was a four-year treadmill. After that Saturday night to Sunday morning, I have a brother that lives in Brandon, so I stayed at their house when I first moved out there. So my brother and my sister-in-law and I are having coffee in a restaurant, and in the booths on each side of us, you can hear union. They don't do nothing for us. They don't do anything. Goddamn Maple Leaf, blah, blah, blah. But it was quite obvious that the union had more bad points against us even than the company did because the company gave him a paycheck. Right from that minute, it became very obvious that part of my role in there as a union rep had to be to, in order to improve what people thought of the union, we had to improve what people thought of the company because you have to be proud to go to work. Because the day that you don't want to go into that workplace because you don't feel like you shouldn't be there anymore. You need a paycheck. Yes, you need to eat, so that's what's there. But if that's all the motivation you have, then it just doesn't make life what it should be, right? So that became a real challenge. And it meant getting involved in the community, getting involved in the Labor Council. So being involved in that, we were able to improve our image of UFCW within the ranks. At that point, our shop stewards and everything that were working in the Maple Leaf plant couldn't involve them in the labor council because they didn't know what UFCW was yet. You know, so we had to make sure they knew what UFCW is before you can take that one step further into the community. But we had just a great group of shop stewards. We had shop stewards meetings once a week, and that meant giving up one evening of their life once a week. And the issues that came up, we dealt with them and okay, this is what we got, where we got, how do we provide support here, how do we get more people involved there, all of that sort of piece. And they're basically an education on UFCW all at the same time, right? Because you're talking about those issues, so they're getting to meet all of that sort of part. So it was intense. And then we did the same on health and safety. So we had the health and safety captains as well, and they met as well so that they could be up on the issues. I think they were monthly, and providing the training, working through the training center to get them the training and get them up to speed. The other portion that we did, they had lead hands as part of the collective bargaining unit. So worked with the training center and UFCW to build a lead hand training program because they're the ones dealing with our members on the floor, you know, so got them a really quality lead hand training program. It got rid of a lot of the problems because now the lead hands also understood the collective agreement, knew what was in it, understood health and safety, knew what was in it. But it worked out. I believe it was really successful, and I believe they're still using that model today. I don't know if they still do the lead hand training, but definitely it made a difference, and you could see it when they first started taking the classes, right after the first one.
While the early tension between the meatpackers and the retail clerks slowly subsided within UFCW, the echoes of it can still be felt today. Current UFCW Local 832 president Jeff Traeger explains how the retail and meatpacking side of the union has come together after the merger, as well as how the echoes of that split can still be felt today, but is more of an asset than a hindrance to the union.
My strength and my specialty really is the red meat business. And the retail business, but the retail grocery business from the 30,000 feet level. And that is that in 2004 and 2005 and 2008 and 2009, I was riding shotgun with Robert on all major bargaining for Safeway and Westfair. I've serviced those units a little bit, but I've never worked as a retail grocery worker. I've worked in the industrial side, and most of my career as a union rep or a negotiator was spent dealing with the red meat side. So when you look at the history of UFCW, it really is a merger of the clerks and the butchers, right? If you look at that, and that's what UFCW apparently stands for, is because they were arguing about the name, about what the name, whether it was going to be the Amalgamated Butchers Local or the Food and Commercial Workers, and there was a vote over that, and it came up that UFCW was going to be the name. And if you ask a red meat guy what it stands for, is clerks won, because they got to pick their name, right? So there's always been a bit of a dichotomy there, if you can call it that, and I certainly come a little bit stronger from the side of the industrial red meat packing house side. Robert came from the retail. He was a worker that worked at the Lucerne bread plant, so he was in the Safeway fold and did retail work there as well. So the combination of the two of us together was always really, really good, because I had the real deep understanding of the one side of the business, he had it of the other side of the business, and so combined at the bargaining table, we were a pretty good tandem. And that was part of one of the reasons I was very happy that B agreed to be my secretary treasurer when I took over, because B comes entirely from the retail side. She was a Westfair worker. She walked the picket line in 87. I was glad that B agreed to take that position, because we have the same mechanic right now. And then obviously when it comes to Westfair bargaining, I'll be leading bargaining, but it's important to have somebody there who lives it, who worked it, who was, I really believe that you have to have that connection.
What can we glean from these stories on the merger that created UFCW? On the one hand, we see the merging of two union cultures, but as well, a wider commentary on the changes in the economy over the last three decades. On the one hand, we have seen how industries like meatpacking were reorganized over three decades, which saw a decrease in wages and benefits, as well as a change in the workforce. On the other hand, retail and grocery stores have not been reorganized in the same way, although there is a persistent problem with a lack of good wages and benefits. What we can see is how the wider change in the economy affects unions and how they respond to those changes. I've been listening to the podcast series Celebrating Our Past, Preparing Our Future, documenting the rich history of United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 832. The podcast series is produced through a partnership between United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 832, and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg. Music by Broke for Free, Christian Bjorklund, Gillicuddy, Jazz Har, and Project 5AM. Narration by Scott Price, with production assistance from Kent Davies. For more information about the Oral History Center, go to oralhistorycenter.ca. For more information about UFCW Local 832, go to ufcw832.com.